Okay, we're going to try to get off the ground here.
It's not that sexy. It's just in my mind.
Got to find my torn in form. So, as we're beginning to get started here, like to make a few comments to the individuals in the room here, just briefly, that we are an appointed board by the governor, and we all have careers and positions in our real lives, and we actually volunteer and step forward and give of our time here today. And so our role will be kind of to judge the information and weigh it out to the best of our abilities to make decisions on what's before us. We don't wake up in the morning and make these rules up. These are law that has been set out and guidelines that are given to us, and we try to respect everyone's viewpoint over the years to the best of our ability. We will have some comments and questions from our advisory team, and then we will listen to the prosecutional team and also to the dischargers. So I think first at this time I will ask to have all of you that are, or I guess we're going to go back first. Again, this is a little confusing because I've had a number of people sign a release. So we'll start with you, Bruce. For that, you can kind of help us for.
Right, just to make sure all on track. Board and hopefully the parties, the advisory team and the prosecution team, just to make it clear to those in the audience, the board's advisory team, myself and legal counsel Dorothy Dickey, have not been involved in the preparation of the enforcement items. That has been done by the board's prosecution team. These are hearings to consider administrative civil liability for late submittal of the annual monitoring report required under the state's general permit. And at the time the agenda was put out about 2 weeks ago, we had items 9 through 22 listed as needing hearings to consider that administrative civil liability. Since that time, the representatives for items 15, 16, 18, and 21 have settled the complaint issued by the prosecution team, so there is no need to hold hearings on those items. In addition, we have understand that the prosecution team has now received signed waivers to the right to have hearing from the representatives for items 10 through 13 and item 17. So what that means is that I'd recommend the board consider continuing items 10 through 13 and 17 to a future hearing. If indeed those parties do settle like they've indicated, there would be no need for a hearing. If they don't settle, we would have to have a hearing. But they have waived their right to a hearing today. So the first.
I would so move.
Hang on a minute here. Yep. Thank you for the motion.
So I would recommend doing that motion for continuance on those items.
Right. And so bottom line is we will hear 9, 14, 19, 20, and 22. All right.
Assuming the board does continue those other items.
We need a motion first. Okay, you did that. Thank you. In a second, we have any further discussion? If not, all in favor to continue those?
Aye.
Aye. No opposed. So we will continue those items to a later date. All right. So we got it. Move some more of our 8.5 pounds of paper around.
That's handy.
Okay. Sure. So our next, just let me get caught up here. Our next step will be, and as I say, Thank goodness I have a wonderful, we have a wonderful vice chair, and so she's going to kind of co-chair with me the, with this busy schedule we have. So at this time, what I would ask, please, that everyone from 9, 14, 19, 20, 22, are you all in the room? Would you please stand, or your representative stand, please? So are we missing somebody? So may I ask who is present at the moment? What agenda item are you, sir? 20, thank you. You are here. Very good. And you, ma'am?
22,
thank you. So 9, 14, 19, are you not in the room? Okay, so I'd like to swear in, so it'd be nice if they were in the room, if I may, please. Thank you for being here, sir. And ma'am. So bear with us 1 minute if we find our other Mr. Knight or Miss Knighty. I guess we have to be politically correct there. Right? So, so we will need legal guidance on the ones that are not present if they do not show here before swearing in, or if they do show, how do we handle that?
If anyone is not present for the swearing in, we would do a swearing in for that individual item. And in fact, I guess for that reason, I would just recommend that if we have any question at the beginning of each item, we ask the discharger to confirm that they were sworn in.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so at this time we will swear in the two individuals that are here, I guess. So, thank you. All relevant evidence which any person desires to be considered by this board must be introduced at this hearing, first by the board staff, secondly by the discharger, third by public agencies, and fourth by any other interested persons. The board and staff counsel may ask questions to clarify the testimony of a witness at any time. Cross-examination of any witnesses by others will be allowed following completion of direct testimony by all persons. Each person testifying will commence by stating his or her name, address, and whom he or she represents. The hearings will not be conducted according to technical rules of evidence. The board will accept any evidence or testimony which is reasonably relevant to the issues. All board files, exhibit, and agenda materials pertaining to this matter will be made part of the record of this proceeding. Additional written material will be made part of the record at the discretion of the board. Those wishing to testify in the hearing will now rise, please.
Including the prosecution.
Including? Do you promise to tell the truth? Thank you. Okay, so we will move on. Our next step will be... You can announce the vice chair. We'll co-chair.
Well, we were asked to just clarify to everyone that each case that is presented is supposed to take about 30 minutes. That includes the presentations that we will hear from the prosecution team. And what we were going to do first was to have now that we've opened the public hearing, to have a master presentation from the prosecution team that is relevant to all of the cases that we are hearing. Except that, Dorothy's going to correct me.
I'm just going to jump in here and say that the notice that went out for each proceeding indicated that each party would have a total of 30 minutes to do any sort of presentation that they would want to do. Of course, the chair can determine that it's repetitive or whatever, but they get a maximum.
Right, and we will be asking the dischargers to come to the front table here and sit with us up here during your agenda item. Is that correct? And so what was my other thought I had here down? So those were the important things. And I guess prosecutorial team, we start with the first agenda item, and you're going to kind of give a master overview of all of them briefly as possible. Oh, I know what it was. I'm sorry. So if I may, any funds that could or will be collected from this board, it does not stay here. It goes to the cleanup and abatement fund, correct? And this does not again, this is not something that we've made up as a board. This is a law of California water and policies, and so this is how we have to deal with this. This is not just a fee or a permit or something like that. This is in the statute of the law. Is that correct, legal counsel? So, very good. I want to get that out for everyone. So,
if I can just jump in here, just to return to something you just said, I understand that the prosecution wishes to make a request of the board that it be provided with an opportunity to make a master presentation. So following their request, then I think we would give the parties who are present an opportunity to voice any objections, and then the board would, or chair would rule on that request.
So the two in the room understand kind of where we're going. We'll work with you, and we'll work with everyone as best as possible in this procedure here. Okay, go ahead.
Well, with that,
yeah, make sure everyone can hear you also.
Yes, this is Tom Mumley, head of the prosecution team, and we respectfully request opportunity to provide an overview presentation that would apply to all the cases and before proceeding to each case specifically.
If I can just jump in, I advise the board that the master presentation should apply to those parties who are here seated in the room who have so indicated. If another one has come in since the chair asked the folks to identify themselves a couple minutes ago, and it could apply to them too, but otherwise it will apply to those two that have indicated that they are here. And then if other discharges come in later, the prosecution can make a request to do another master presentation that would apply to those other ones. Otherwise, that presentation can be provided on the record of each one.
Okay, and it was noticed that 11 a.m., so we are starting at 11:27, I think, something like that. No, I'm sorry, 11:37. Okay, good.
And it's a brief, relatively brief presentation anyway. If circumstances cause us to have to give it again, it won't be too long. So with that, I'll call Keith Lichten, who heads up our enforcement unit, will give the overview presentation, the general presentation.
Good morning, I'm Keith Lichten. I supervise one of the Water Board's two enforcement sections, and I'm part of the board's prosecution team for this matter. For the record, the matters before us today are items 9, 14, 19, 20, and 22, but I'll refer to them as the items or today's items. I also, as we start, would like to introduce the other members of the prosecution team for these items, and they are Assistant Executive Officers Tom Mumley and Diane White, Attorney Ann Carroll, and staff Laurent Maillet and Hapte Kifley, who have prepared the items today. And again, today's items are proposed administrative civil liabilities for late submittal of annual monitoring reports required by the industrial stormwater permit. I'm going to begin with an overview of the progressive enforcement process that has led to today's items, and then following the overview, as we mentioned, the prosecution team will present the facts and arguments specific to each agenda item separately. My understanding is that the board will act on each item separately. So the statewide NPDES general permit for discharges of industrial stormwater activity, as the name suggests, regulates discharges of stormwater from sites that have industrial facilities. Examples of regulated facilities include lighter industry like wineries, soda bottlers, and book printers, and heavier industries like auto dismantlers, quarries, and concrete plants. The general permit requires facilities to operate their facility in a clean way, pursuant to a stormwater pollution prevention plan. That plan is developed by and is specific to each facility. The plan incorporates the permit requirements and typically includes practices such as good housekeeping and putting the facility's most polluting activities under cover so they're not exposed to stormwater. Facility operators must also periodically inspect the facility to see how those practices are performing and if there is room for improvement. At least twice a year, operators must sample up to 2 runoff events each year, again to see how are those pollution control practices functioning, is there a chance to make them better. And finally, by July 1st of each year, each facility operator must submit an annual report that includes those observations, the analytical results for any sampling, and improvements or changes made as a result. The annual report also includes an evaluation and self-certification of the facility's compliance with the permit. So I want to underline the importance of this annual report. The foundation of the Industrial Stormwater Program is self-compliance and self-reporting by facility operators. As you'll see in the next slide, we have about 1,400 facilities under permit in our 9-county Bay Area region. They have a wide range of activities, a wide range of locations, and potential pollutants. Facility operators are most familiar with those activities that are at their facility. Each facility's clean operation depends primarily on the operator's engagement, self-inspection, and self-improvement. The prosecution team is presenting these matters today because late reporting is a permit violation, but also because we believe that the facility operator's failure to timely submit an annual report indicates the facility is not fully engaged in compliance with the permit. As I mentioned, as of July 1st, 2009, the due date for last year's annual report, about 1,400 facilities were under the industrial stormwater permit in our region. More than 1,200 of them, about 87%, timely submitted their annual report. On August 3rd, 2009, Regional Water Board staff mailed expedited settlement offers and notices of noncompliance to those dischargers who had not timely submitted their annual report. This includes the dischargers for the items at today's hearings. These expedited settlement offers and notices of noncompliance noted the lateness of the discharger's annual report and offered to settle the violation for $1,000. As long as the discharger submitted the late report and agreed to the settlement by a specified deadline. The expedited settlement offers resolved about 135 cases. 47 cases were not resolved. These 47 cases represent about 3% of the 1,400 permitted facilities. These were cases where the discharger did not submit the report, or they did submit it, but they didn't agree to the settlement agreement. On February 16th, 2010, Regional Water Board prosecution team staff issued 45 administrative civil liability complaints against the dischargers who had not settled under that expedited settlement offer process. The prosecution team staff issued an additional 2 complaints on April 15th. The general public has not submitted any comments on any of these complaints. However, the dischargers in several cases made comments, and these comments, as well as the response from the prosecution team, were included in the agenda package for each complaint, for each item, and will be covered separately for each item. So just to go through the 47 remaining late annual report cases, 28 of those 47, 28 facility operators, have waived their right to a hearing and either paid the liability in full or agreed to pay it in full. 5 facility operators agreed to settle the complaints, typically agreeing to a payment plan. 4 cases were dismissed based on new information that the facility had closed without notifying us, such that, in fact, no report had been due, or that the report, in fact, had been submitted in a timely manner. There are then 10 late report cases remaining. 5 of these cases are before you today, and we expect the remaining 5 to be heard at the June and July, or to be brought before you for consideration for June and July board meetings. Now we'll discuss the penalties for these late reporting cases. California Water Code Section 13385C1 allows the Regional Water Board to impose up to $10,000 in civil liability for each day in which a particular violation occurs. Water Code Section 13385E also requires the Regional Board to consider certain factors in determining the amount of any liability imposed. As set forth in the complaints, the prosecution team considered the factors and determined that the proposed liability for each of the today's items should be based on a penalty of either $25 per day or $50 per day of violation, that is to say, per day a report was late. Those dischargers who submitted their annual report before the complaints were issued in February were assessed a penalty of $25 per day. If they submitted the report after that date, I should mention all of the liabilities for today's items were assessed at $25 per day. Dischargers who did not submit their annual report before the complaints were issued, and those who had previously received an ACL penalty for late report submittal, that is to say, repeat violators, were assessed a penalty of $50 per day. Again, all of today's items, the proposed liability is assessed at $25 per day. In addition to the daily penalties, The proposed liabilities include $1,800 for recovery of staff costs incurred for the enforcement of each matter. As a result, the proposed liability for each of today's items ranges from $2,850 to $4,025. I would note that for the 47 complaints as a whole, the proposed liabilities ranged from a low of $2,850 to a maximum of $13,300. Unless there are any questions, this concludes the prosecution team's introduction to today's items. And I would say with that, and look to the attorneys, my understanding is the board will close all of the hearings and open the hearing for item 9, which is consideration of administrative civil liability for Depot Water Records in Hayward. And then Hopti Kiefer will be presenting that matter.
That's correct, yes.
You want to close the preliminary hearing on all background? I would so move.
Moved and second. All in favor to close the preliminary hearing? Aye.
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 No opposition? Okay, so moving on to...
I would actually recommend that we take the items where the parties are actually in the room first and not have them wait while we go through items where the parties are not even here.
Right. So out of courtesy, they've been in the room for a long time.
Let's do that.
And we were introduced to the parties from items 20 and 22, and there's a third.
I understand that there's an attorney for item 19.
Was here,
maybe ran out to make a phone call.
Okay, well, let's.
So I would recommend
the people
going to item 20.
Showed a sincere interest in being here.
Next item.
Just to clarify here procedurally for items 20 and 22, the presentation that you just heard applies to those two items. According to my reckoning here, the prosecution has on those items used 9 minutes of its 30 minutes of time. So the prosecution thus on these two items will have 21 minutes. And for the discharger's information, the discharger can make a presentation up there at the podium when it becomes the discharger's turn, and the discharger can sit over here at the table where there's also a microphone for questions. So we've made this long, spacious area available for the discharger's for these items to sit when it's their turn.
Yes, and so then we will go ahead and hear number 20. Is that correct?
Yes, we'll go ahead with number 20, and if the person...
They were sworn in.
...for number 20 wants to take a seat at the table, please.
We have a little microphone there also, just for the record, sir, and that way it will be on the record and everyone can hear a little more clearly.
And we will... start this hearing with the remainder of the prosecution case. Is that correct?
Good morning. My name is Noah Melia. I work in the enforcement section in the San Francisco Bay Regional Water Quality Control Board. And I will be presenting item 20 and 22. European Auto Racking is an auto racking facility located in Newark. In response to the August 2009 expedited settlement offer and notice of non-compliance, the discharger submitted their 2008-2009 annual report in August, 42 days late. The discharger did not accept the settlement offer. The proposed liability is $2,850. We have confirmed through conversation with the discharger that the complaint was served. Following the complaint's issuance, the discharger submitted a waiver asking to engage in settlement negotiations. Additionally, the discharger commented that it was unable to pay the proposed liability and submitted evidence intended to substantiate that comment.
Would you pull the mic just a little bit closer,
yeah,
please?
No problem.
Thank you.
That evidence has been included in the board package for this item. The discharger submitted information intended to show it has debts and expenses, making it unable to pay the proposed liability. However, the submitted information is not complete, and it is not sufficient to demonstrate an inability to pay. As a part of its complaint package, the discharger was served with an ACL fact sheet, or administrative civil liability fact sheet, that included information on how to substantiate and inability to pay. For business, the fact sheet noted a discharger could submit copies of the last 3 years of federal tax returns, including schedules, copies of the last 3 years of company financial audits, copies of the last 3 years of federal tax returns for the business principals, including schedules, and any documentation explaining special circumstances. The discharger submitted a copy of 1 year of federal tax return for John Sauer, the business owner, from 2008, and copies of other documents showing debts owed by either the business or Mr. Sauer. These documents are in your package for this item. As I will discuss, this did not provide enough information for the prosecution team to determine that the discharger has an inability to pay the proposed liability. The discharger submitted information intended to show that it has debts, making it unable to pay the proposed liability. However, the submitted information is not complete and is insufficient to demonstrate an inability to pay. As of the first quarter 2010, in its submittal, the discharger provided evidence showing business debt estimated at $214,000 and separately debt of about $560,000 for Mr. Sauer, secured by Mr. Sauer's personal residence. The discharger's submitted information from 2008 regarding income shows that in 2008, the discharger had gross sales of more than $580,000, generated a business income of $11,687, paid wages of about $74,000, and had, at the end of 2008, inventory valued at about $41,000. Given the discharger's annual gross sales of more than $580,000, business income of more than $11,000, and assets, we believe the discharger is able to pay the proposed liability of $2,850. The discharger appears to have incurred significant debt, and Mr. Sauer reported limited income on his 2008 personal income taxes, and we are sympathetic to these circumstances. However, based on our review of the financial information, the prosecution team did not identify an inability to pay that led us to decrease the proposed liability. We believe the discharger is able to pay the proposed liability and that the board should impose it. This concludes our presentation on the matter. If you have any questions, we will be happy to answer them.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple questions for the prosecution. First, the tentative order, the proposed order, indicates an address that differs from the complaint. I think it's important for the record to get the address straight as to exactly what address you believe the discharger should have submitted an order for. Is it 7325 Wells or 7324 Wells Avenue?
Well, that's what you can do to the record. I believe that the address is 7324 Wells Avenue in Newark.
So, Mr. Chair, the tentative order should be revised, and so we'll address that later on when the board asks.
I think that address number again.
7324. The third page in your packet is a tentative order, so that would be the order that the board would adopt, that the prosecution proposes that the board adopt. It includes an error on the fourth line of text down, and when it indicates the name of the facility, the number, the address of the facility. I think the second question, if the prosecution could go back a couple of slides to the one where it talks about the business paying an income generates wages. There. This slide indicates that the business generated 2008 income of $11,687. I think it would be helpful for the prosecution to indicate where in the record that number comes from and whether that is income to the discharger or that was for wages paid to other individuals. Can you point us where in the record that comes from?
Sure, I can do that. It's in Schedule C of the 2008 individual tax return.
You could give us a moment to flip through here.
Sure.
Thank you.
just in case DD is going in the same direction that I am, what I'm curious about the wages is whether or not wages are paid for services rendered by the business.
That was my question exactly.
It's a little bit slow. This is ambiguous, and I think it deserves clarification.
So I'm looking at Schedule C, and what line should I be looking at?
It's line 29.
Uh-huh.
And it has a tentative profit or loss, and we have a number of $11,687 on that line.
And wait. So wages are indicated. I'm sorry. Wages are indicated to be $74,370
on line 26.
On line 26. And is the prosecution making an allegation as to whom those wages went?
I do not know to whom that those wages went. That is correct.
Thank you. My last question relates to the response to comments. The response to comments indicates that the prosecution believes that the discharger is able to pay the proposed liability in part based upon a conversation that the prosecution had with the discharger, in which the prosecution asserts that the discharger stated that the discharger owns automotive equipment such as a forklift and a lift. That sounds like hearsay evidence to me because I don't see any evidence in the record to confirm that. Is there some... For what are you offering that?
As an asset.
Yes, this would be an asset that is owned by the discharger. If he owns the property where the business is located, that's something that we need to be considering in the inability to pay. This is direct testimony from the staff who spoke directly to Mr. Straub.
I didn't hear any testimony here.
No,
I saw it in the record, and it was a statement that this conversation occurred at a meeting. So I think the discharger will have an opportunity to address that in the discharger's presentation.
Yes.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
Okay. Prosecution team, are you completed there with comments? Board member?
Just as a matter of procedure, in the future, these are voluminous documents. Maybe it would be appropriate to number each page so that we can find these. We've had to look hard to find Schedule C and all this.
Okay. Thank you. Now we can go to the discharger. So you've heard the comments from the prosecution team, sir. Welcome, and now you may make your comments. Is that correct, Gordon?
Yes, I just wanted to clarify, sir, that you can either go up to the podium to speak, or you can speak right there as you wish. And if you can speak there, just make sure. It sounds like your microphone's on.
I can sit with you there, do what you would like. She doesn't have to sit back behind you. She can sit up with you there. You're welcome to sit up there.
And if you could introduce yourself for the record, that would be...
My name is Jean-Michel Straub.
You may be seated. That's fine. Sir.
Oh, no. European Auto.
Right. Keep your mic with you up there. Sorry. Oh. Go ahead, please.
First, I would like to ask the committee and, why we have that problem in the beginning, not submitting the report on time. I operate a small business. It's basically family business. I have brothers. They help me out. And we've been struggling through years. I mean, and especially now with that recession we're experiencing. I mean, we have a little difficulty with staff. And another problem is the practice of having the report before. Usually they send it to you, in regular mail, and you fill it up by July 1st. There is a dateline, and it says like July 1st. This is the deadline. And I've been very committed to this bit all the last 14, 15 years I am in business. I never have any problem putting that report on time. Lately, you know, the last couple of years, they didn't send those. I mean, I'm not computer, you know, I'm not computer, you know, I try to do all my best, you know. I've never had any violation before, and I thought, you know, by the board, by the vision board, they remind me to, I mean, not remind me, I mean, to put that report right away after I noticed, you know, I went far away with it. So I did the report and I sent it. And, you know, this is basically, you know, it's lack of computer skills and, you know, the staff, you know, to help me out finalizing that report. This is basically what it is. And I am human like everybody else, you know. Sorry for everybody who I harmed by not committing that report on time. And I ask everybody, we don't have to come to this point, you know, to get to here, you know, because we did what I did. I mean, I'm human, and I'm under a lot of stress. You saw my bills, you haven't, you know, I don't have any money left. Immediately when I called the phone number, I said, you know, oh, yeah, I am in violation. You know, I mean, what I should do? He said, you have to pay $1,000. I asked, his name is Dennis Fong. I asked him, Dennis, I don't have $1,000 for you. What do you want me to do? We should just send a letter explaining what you did and we'll look into it. I thought it's a simple thing. I did the letter. She helped me, you know, casting that letter. And we did what we have to do. I mean, like normal people. I mean, I didn't know that $1,000 is going to be $2,850. I really respect the laws. I am a good citizen. You know, I never had any traffic ticket in my life. I never have a parking ticket in my life. You know, and, you know, this year it's really hurt. Yeah, I do have a lift, yeah. But it cost me every time to repair it, tons of money. I do own the land, yes, but I have a mortgage on it. I asked Mr. Miller, Mr. Laurent, I asked him, I have a financial problem. He said, yes, okay. What do you want me to send you? He said, what do you have? I told him, you know, I'm losing my house. I have letters. I do have a credit card. He said, yes, that's enough. I sent him those. And still tell them, you know, it's not. Oh, John, he owns the land. Oh, John, you know, he have a lift. By the way, it's 20, 30 years old lift. Well, I asked the committee to, you know, I went that far, you know, I came here to just address my point. To see, you know, this year it's so hard on me. And, you know, they misinformed me about, you know, this, the $1,000 is going to be that much. And what I heard today, it could be going to $13,000. Because all this paperwork, what these guys, what the staff are being doing. I mean, if I knew what's going to happen to me now, oh my God. I really ask for forgiveness. I really ask for understanding. It's my first offense. I mean, if there is room in the law, can you know, it's in your hand.
Thank you. Any questions on the discharge, please?
Mr. Schreier, you mentioned that you sent a letter that explained your financial circumstances, and I don't find that in the record. I'd like a response from you from the staff. I have some follow-up questions, but what you basically said is you were stuck in a position. You did file the report, albeit late, and then you sent in a letter that you thought would stop the accumulation of penalties. Do you have a copy of that letter?
I didn't know that there is any accumulation of penalty until I see it already.
Okay. Now the stamp?
It is in your package.
Another not page.
Very back of attachment 4. Second to last page, or actually the last sheet.
Page 27, I guess, there is a letter.
There is a 27 up in the corner.
Mr. Chair, I think it would be helpful for the record for me to ask the discharger one question. I think I know what the answer is, but I don't think it was really brought out. Sir, you indicated that previously you received a paper copy of something telling you it was time to submit an annual report. Is that right?
No, I didn't.
But you indicated something about not being a computer user and that somehow this was relevant. And I don't think the record really explained why it's relevant. What did you get that using a computer would have been helpful or necessary to do?
Well, you have to go on the website, you know, and print the report, and, you know, basically it was hard for me to get to that report. It was a little hard for me to get.
And I thought what I understood you to say is that you were able to file a report in past years because there was some difference in procedure, and that's what I was trying to get at.
Well, before we used to get the report in the mail, and it's all printed out nice and clean, and we used to fill it up. You know, and it says the date, the due date on it, and that's how I follow my bills. I personally pay my own bills. I basically do everything in advance.
So I think a follow-up to that question from my perspective to the prosecutional team. So the 1,400 permits we send out, that it is all online now, and no more hard copies mailed through the 1,400?
That is correct. To file your annual report, it is all online. What it is it's a document that you can download. You can either fill it out by hand or on the computer. And this process has been online for several years.
Okay, thank you.
And can I follow that up? Is there a letter that goes out from the regional board saying your report's going to, just a reminder saying that your report is going to be due, or do we anticipate that people are going to remember from your doing it?
No, there is no reminder that goes out. The face of the report says that the due date is July 1. This year we also sent out the expedited payment offer, which included a notice of noncompliance and saying that they could settle the matter. Previously it also laid out all of the legal authority and the potential for higher penalties in that letter.
I have a question.
What is the first document on paper that a potential registrant has received from the board?
This year it was the August 3rd expedited settlement offer and notice of noncompliance.
How about the previous year? He testified, Mr. Schreier testified, that he'd been receiving documentation previously. When is the first time we went solely online without any paper?
Board Member Peacock, I don't recall exactly which year that was. It was at least several years ago.
I have a follow-up question. How does a discharger know to look on the computer? That's one question. How do they know that there's a certain date they're supposed to look at it? And the second question is there any provision for someone who physically does not have a computer or could not, for some reason, use a computer to do something different other than pay $1,000?
Okay, I'll try to address those points. If I've missed something, please let me know. First, the general framework for permit compliance is laid out in the permit, and when an industrial facility first obtains permit coverage by filing the notice of intent, part of signing that notice of intent or NOI is saying, yes, I've read the permit, and I'm familiar with the permit requirements, including the annual reporting to do. Oh no, I've lost that. I'm sorry, really. Ms. Vicky, can you help me? You had asked about is there provision for people who are unable to use a computer or don't have a computer?
I guess we've heard some testimony here that the procedures changed. Presumably they changed since he got coverage under the NOI. And we've heard some testimony that he has difficulty using a computer. So my question, just to make sure the record is really clear here, is there a procedure or something or other that people who do not use a computer or could not use a computer can use to comply with this law?
Yes, there is. It's not so unusual for us to get a telephone call requesting that we send someone a copy of a blank annual report. We've done that for a number of dischargers in the past. So that's one way of doing it, is via telephone. You can send us a letter. That's sort of the fallback method, I would suppose.
I have some questions.
All right. Board Member Singh.
The first question I have, that is there a practice that we send them a reminder before July 1st, every month ahead of time, that to the discharger, that the report is due, please send it by July 1st, otherwise there will be liability, administrative liability or fine, or we don't have this practice, or we have done it in the past?
We don't have that practice. That's something that's being considered now.
You've never done it.
Okay. I'd like to...
Now, I have another question here. That all the addresses given on your communication to him is 7324 Wells Avenue, but the final tentative order setting the civil liability, and you have a wrong address. Does it have any legal implication? Look at, please, on page number 3 or something, the 7325 Wells Avenue. Does it have, because it went to a wrong address?
Yeah, we're going to go to our legal advisor.
I'm going to ask a legal question, so I'm waving my hand. I think that at the beginning of the hearing, I noted that there was a difference on the proposed order, and the prosecution indicated how they wished the order to read. What would have a legal implication as to communications with the discharger is how the communications with the discharger read and whether the communications in fact reached the discharger. But this order is not something that was mailed to the discharger independently. This is an order that was prepared for today's hearing and is the prosecution's proposal of what the board would adopt. And my question at the outset was just to make sure that we understood what order the order should apply to.
But this one is addressed to European authority. That order is addressed to, not to us, but addressed to European auto trackers.
It's a proposal which the board can change in any way it wishes before the board acts upon it. It can take out paragraphs, add new paragraphs, change the address, do all sorts of things. It's just a proposal for the board's adoption. But I think your question goes to whether the communications between the staff and the discharger went to the right address. And I can't speak to that.
On August 3rd, 2009.
I have a further question, please, because the question from my over there. You said that he had a liability of $214,000 on your second page, and the inventory is $41,000. So does it mean that he has more liability than inventory, or how did it come out that he has assets? I mean, I was just trying to clarify on the financial situation. On the first line, you are saying that he has a liability of $214,000 in a loan, and his inventory is $41,000. That means that he is really in negative territory right now. Can you clarify that for me, please?
Yes, I'd be happy to. The items that are presented on the reference slide are intended to be they're essentially a summary of information that was submitted by the discharger for the discharger's facility. So they're not necessarily meant to be directly compared, which is to say, when we're considering ability to pay, this penalty, considering all of this information together. So we recognize that European Auto has substantial business debt, but we believe that there's also income, which in combination with business assets, including the end-of-year inventory, but not limited to the end-of-year inventory.
Well, I'm not asking you to tell me what they sent to you, but when you see these numbers, what did you presume? I mean, what did you presume about his assets? I mean, what was your assumption? I mean, that's what I'm asking. How did you read these numbers yourself? And I'm asking what you presumed. So that's why I was asking the question. Okay, well, we'll follow up later.
All right, yeah. I'll go to Board Member McGrath, and I'll come back to you, Board Member. Yes.
Keith, I noticed and when I looked at the general presentation, there were a number of people that presumably filed a few days late, but less than 30 days. Was there any penalty associated with that?
No, there was not.
So this guy filed 12 days late from the no penalty clause. Was his report satisfactory?
It is my understanding that his report was satisfactory, yes, sir.
Okay, well, then I have a comment. Assuming that the federal tax statement is correct and there's $11,000 profit on a business revenue of $580,000, that makes a pretty compelling case to me that there are issues with capacity to pay, which is what I think our issue is today. I don't think it's necessarily persuasive with the record I see before me. I am going somewhere with this. I don't know if he took down debt on his house to go to Las Vegas or to try to prop up a business that was struggling. I don't know who we pay wages to. But I have a prima facie case here that does not compel me for 12 days late to hit it for $2,200 on $11,800. What I would suggest is that the staff and Mr. Schrauer sit down and both reassess your positions. That's what I would suggest.
Board Member Schroeder? I just have one bit of clarification, and the previous board member covered some of that. On your tax return, it shows, as was mentioned, $11,687 business income from your business, and no wages paid to yourself that I can see. Is that correct?
I don't sound to look.
You're not paying yourself.
No. Okay. I'm really sorry. This is the situation. Since I get into myself into small business, and
so the $74,000 plus in wages is for employees.
There is wages for employees, and there is outside services also.
Vice Chair, okay, yeah. I'm going to shift gears a little bit, and I think I'm able to do this. But on these violations, do we look at the potential for a pollution issue when we're looking at the reports not filed timely? In other words, if we have a case in general, I'm just speaking, that has huge potential pollution issues, or some that maybe not have such a serious pollution issue, do we look at that, or we're just strictly looking at the late filing?
Mr. Chair, if I can just clarify something. I saw you looking to the prosecution, but you said, what do we look at? So I'm assuming you're asking, should the board be looking at? And yes, most certainly looking at the effect on the environment is appropriate. The statutory standards, I think, are laid out in the complaint. If you give me just a moment, I can flip to them. But certainly the effect on the environment is one of them. If you want to talk about what the prosecution, how the prosecution weighed them in making its recommendation, that's fine. But I'm looking at the complaint again. It doesn't appear to be a numbered page. It appears to be page 3 within the complaint. It begins a discussion of the statutory factors. the nature, circumstances, extent, and gravity of the violation, susceptibility of the discharge and susceptibility cleanup, discharger's ability to pay, prior history of violations, degree of culpability, savings resulting from the violation, other jet matters that justice may require. And I think that the effect on the environment certainly falls within nature, circumstances, extent, and gravity of the violation.
Thank you. Yes, Board Member Peacock.
I agree with everything Board Member McGrath has said, but I think we have a more fundamental issue here, and that is the issue of due process. Did this individual receive adequate notice that a report was due on the due date? And the question is, if we have changed our procedures, are we requiring people who may have no computer capability to acquire computer capability? Or is there provision in the law that says no matter what computer ability you have, we send out these notices by computer and you're responsible for compliance? I think that's the fundamental distinction that we need to make before we even look at an income tax return or anything else.
If I could speak to that, Board Member Peacock.
Sure.
This discharger has had permit coverage for several years, as he stated, and in that permit, it specifically lays out the deadline that this annual report is due every year. That has not changed. The only part of the process that seems to have changed based on testimony from staff is that it's computer, you self-report on the computer now. Staff has reported that they've received phone calls so that we've helped them and assisted dischargers to timely report without the use of the computer. So we're not sending notices via computer as far as the testimony has gone.
Right. Also, I just wanted to expand on that briefly, which is that there is an opportunity to file electronically on the computers if dischargers wish to. However, the aspect where the web comes in this case is that the hard copy report is downloaded from the computer. The vast majority of the annual reports that we receive are hard copies and are filled out either by hand or on the computer.
And we're just about used up our 30 minutes here pretty well, too, so we can get... Yes, go ahead, sir.
What I think that this... my friend, Bill Peacock, he said that he had adequate notice to submit by July 1st, but what I understood that we don't send any notice. He's supposed to send it by July 1st, something like we pay property tax. Now, the county sends me a bill, but they don't have to send me the bill. They're not required. I have to pay the property tax, otherwise they'll penalize 10%. But it's still as a courtesy, they send us a bill as a reminder. But I understand that we don't have that procedure over here, if I understood correctly, right? So he has to remember himself on his calendar that this report is due by July 1st. And I understand he has done it every time in the past, but this time for some reason it failed.
I'd like to, if I could, just say two things about that. The first is the annual report is obviously the due date's written into the permit, but it's a combination of work that's been done throughout the year, quarterly inspections, sampling work. So it's something that's essentially built up to or prepared throughout the year and becomes due on July 1st. The other point I wanted to make is just to... some of the board members have been here in past years when these kinds of matters have been considered. And you may have noticed that this year represents a change from our approach in past years. In past years, we sent out a combination of two letters reminding a discharger after the report was due that they were late and trying to corral those late reports to get them in. And only for those dischargers who did not submit the report within a reasonable time after the second letter did we bring issue complaints. The difference with this year is we, after a month of lateness, as we testified, an early settlement letter was, early settlement offer notice of noncompliance was issued, so we started off at $1,000. And the reason for that is that we had pretty consistently similar number of dischargers being late every year under the old process, and we're trying to find a way to catch people's attention a little more and to push permit compliance a little bit more. There's a second reason, and that is that process of sending two letters out took a little more time than sending out one letter. As a result, you may remember that the penalties for those reports were typically on the order of $10,000 for reports that were late, because usually by the time they were very late, and for ones that were not submitted were typically around $20,000. And so we were also trying to find a way to, sort of slap someone on the wrist for a late report penalty or impose a penalty for that that would catch someone's attention without getting to those higher numbers.
Oh, I would like to suggest to Mariela, maybe not practical. You know, the modern technology, not everybody has a computer, but many of these businesses, you have how many, 1,400 discharges? They must have email address. Maybe a couple of months ahead of time, July 1st, send an email. Yep. Your report is due, otherwise there is a penalty. You know, IRS is not supposed to send me that you have to submit by April 14th, the income tax is done, but for every year, for some reason, they send me 1040 with my name and title there. 1040 little booklet. I get it in my mail every year. Although I don't use it because I do it on computer. In spite of that, they send me a reminder. Even if they don't send me that reminder, still I'm liable to submit the tax return by April 15th or the penalties. So if something can be implemented at low cost and a mass volume email, one same letter goes to everybody, might be worth considering. I don't know.
I think we have a couple of issues on timing and reporting and technology here that, as you mentioned down there, that we're very concerned about. Go ahead, board member.
I'd like to craft a motion.
And the vice chair had a comment also, so...
Well, let's see if the motion goes, gets a second, and whether or not it goes. This happened, you can second it. We did the math the same way. This is not somebody who is a scofflaw. There's not a repeated period. This is not a business that is making and bearing a lot of money, and we can consider ability to pay. If somebody was 30 days late and didn't pay a fine, and somebody's 42 days late, they should pay a fine. It does focus the mind, but I'm willing to set it at $25 a day times 1,200, which is $300. So I would move that we revise the amount in the staff report to $300, representing 12 days late, a pretty good faith effort by the applicant, and I think we spent enough time here to know that there's not a great capacity to pay.
I second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion, please, Vice Chair?
Mr. Chair, if I can just jump in. After the board does its discussion before its vote, once I get a sense of how things are going on this, I might wave at the chair and ask your indulgence to try to craft an amendment to the order.
Yeah, it has to be done that way after we come up with our... Hang on, Dr. Singh, please. So that would be, we have a motion and a second, and now we are discussing it. We'll continue to discuss it, and then if the decision is made to take a vote, then we have to craft for a few moments an amendment to the item, correct? Okay. Vice Chair?
I was going in the same general direction as this motion, based on the same two factors, the first of which is that this gentleman has filed his reports in the past, and the second is that it, I think, is understandable to all of us that we might forget a deadline if we didn't receive something in the mail to remind us. It happens.
And now we'll get to Dr. Singh. In my mind, too, in years past, maybe being here too many years, is we've had some huge visual issues with these industrial stormwater violations that were huge potential. Better go look over here. Huge potential pollution issues also, and I don't see a visual in this one here that there's leaking radiators running down the street and leaking transmissions and things like that that we are all very concerned about.
Well, you've seen in the past some enforcement items that focus on compliance with other aspects of this permit here. These items are focusing specifically on the the requirement to submit a report by July 1.
Correct. Okay, Board Member Singh, briefly, please.
Before I say anything, I just wanted to hear the resolution one more time so that I have a clear understanding.
Well, we have to craft it. We have to vote first, and then we'll craft it first, and then re-vote.
Chairman Mueller?
Yeah. Hang on one second here, please.
So, I think, Dr. Singh, are you asking for the resolution or for the motion?
The motion.
The motion is to alter the order, and I believe I found two places so far that to substitute $300 for $28.50, with the rationale that there are enough issues with capacity to pay, and the actual term over you know, was only 12 days beyond those who didn't actually pay a fine.
Okay, I'm satisfied with it now. Now I understand the motion. Thank you.
That is precisely what the second is, and I call the question, Mr. Chairman.
If I may just have a clarification, board members, on the reduction of the penalty. The $2,850 represents also the $1,800 in staff costs for enforcement. I didn't know whether or not you wanted to consider increasing the penalty to include any of that.
We did not.
Thank you.
The second did not either.
All right. So we will craft the amendment and then vote, or vote first? Why would I get them?
We're going to take enough of a break, 2 minutes, so that Ms. Dickey can craft a revised order that reflects both the motion and the change in address.
And I ask you to hold your places. All right. Yeah. Okay, we're back on board here.
Mr. Chair, I have attempted to craft what I understand to be the intent of the maker of the motion. His intent, and he may jump in and add some corrections here, but let me see if I can capture where I believe the board may be heading on this to give you something concrete on which to vote. The first change to the proposed tentative order would be to modify the address for the reasons that we discussed earlier. As modified, it would read 7324 Wells Avenue. The next change would be in the last line of the first paragraph of the tentative order. The amount 300 would be substituted for the amount 2,850. The next change would be in paragraph 9 of the tentative order. In the third line down, the sentence would read, in opposing the proposed administrative civil liability, the regional board has considered each of the factors prescribed in California Water Code Section 13.385E, based upon information in the record, including evidence regarding discharger's inability to pay the amount proposed, and the testimonies of the public hearing, and information described in greater detail in complaint number R2-2010. So, the end of the sentence. And then there would be a new sentence added. In addition, the Regional Water Board considered that the report was submitted 12 days after board staff considered the report to have passed the cutoff date for enforcement, comma, that the report submitted was satisfactory, and that there was no apparent harm to the environment resulting from the delay. And then the last change would be in the paragraph, additional change would be made in the third line of the paragraph that begins, it is hereby ordered. The amount 300 would be substituted for 2850. In the paragraph numbered 1, the amount 300 would be substituted for 2850. And those are all the changes.
The only other one I picked up was on paragraph 8. That would also be substituted 300. And it is
actually that wouldn't, because that was the complaint that was issued.
That's what's proposed. So, okay. So, and it is so nice to have a lawyer to clean up after.
Do my best.
Okay, so we the maker and the seconder of the motion understand the information.
Concur.
Your intent?
Yes. Concur.
Any further discussion? Board Member Moore, for what it's worth, sir, thank you for complying all these years, submitting your reports on time. And I'm just letting the rest of the board know why I'm going to vote no, because I think you've done enough work showing your inability to pay and having to come here today. So I think you should pay zero. Thank you. Okay, any other discussion? If not, we will have a roll call vote, please, Mary, on this motion. And
Mr. Eliyahu?
Aye.
Mr. McGrath?
Aye.
Mr. Moore?
No.
Mr. Peacock?
Aye.
Mr. Schroeder?
Aye.
Dr. Sitch?
Aye.
Dr. Young?
Aye.
Mr. Muller?
Aye. So ordered. We have two more to get through today, but lunch is ready, and I think we probably wouldn't be as testy if we had a quick break. I would say, with all respect to everyone still waiting, I think by 10 after 1, we'll be back in here. We're going to come back as quickly as possible. We're going to go up to the 15th floor, and I would remind the board members that we can talk about family and grandkids and your latest model of cars, and that's all. Thank you. So, quickly, just after 1, we'll be back in this room. We can leave everything.
Yeah.